And when that's accessible, you know, when you're able to go to the beach or go to the coast,
Oh,
it's going to
England has a pretty
change.
good coastline too.
It does, it has some decent beaches, but it's usually too cold, and the beaches tend to be like shingle beaches and pebble beaches and
Yeah.
stuff like that. And that's not the thing that you imagine. You know, you want a sand
Yeah,
beach or something
that's
to
the
put to
thing.
lie
We don't have
down.
a lot of sand beaches. Like, well, we do, but there's a lot of them, at least if you go into archipelagos, cliffs, but they're smooth cliffs.
Oh, right. So
There's
basically,
rock.
it's not a beach. It's literally into the sea from
Yeah,
a
but it's all
rock face.
smooth because of, well, we have
Weathering and
because
stuff.
ice. No, it's ice. The ice made it smooth in the ice age because the ice moved along and it's all.
Oh, I see. So that's actually very interesting. So in other words, it might be very nice to look at, but
Yeah, you
you can't actually
can.
interact with it too much unless you dive off,
Well,
like you do some cliff diving, I
you,
guess.
because they are smooth, it's easy.
I don't
There's not like
understand.
a jagged cliff to jump in. It's a smooth edge going into the sea, but it's rock.
All right, we'll end up needing to talk about gradients in this case because, you know, it sounds to me fairly unsafe. Anyway, let's get on with it. We're talking about coastlines because anyway,
Swedish and Norwegian coastlines.
indeed, indeed. Welcome everybody to Brain Food Live on Air. It's episode 123. We're bringing it to you every Friday. And I'm super excited today because we've got a really interesting topic that I think is really on everyone's minds. But we're going to try and get some like practical tips on how we can do this better. If we're all shifting to this hybrid mode of work where some members of the team are remote, some members are in an office, what are the techniques that we have to deploy in order to cohere a coherent company culture? Or do we kind of let it go? Do we kind of think, you know what, it's not going to happen. We're going to have remote people there and on-site people here, and we forget about building cultures as a group and maybe build it separately. What is the strategy and what are the techniques? It's going to be super interesting. We've got a late change of scene today, which is also good because, you know, people need to get rested and stuff. Nico can't join us, I'm afraid to say. He actually reported in yesterday and said, hang on, I've got a 39 degree temperature. I think I've got COVID. I'm not sure I should turn up. I said, yeah, you shouldn't turn up. You should, you know, either go to bed or see the doctor. So he's dropped out on us, but he's been upgraded. Upgraded with the wonderful Sophia. I don't even know how to pronounce your name properly. And I've tried
It's
it,
just
but it's
Sophia.
impossible.
That'd be fine.
Sophia, a brew burger, something like this. How do you do it?
Brew barrier.
Brew burger. There you go. Great to have you on, Sophia. In fact, why don't you introduce yourself? Who are you? What it is you do?
Who am I? Okay, I'm Sophia. And if you want to know my surname, it's Brew barrier. Otherwise, just Sophia. I'd be fine. I'm a freelance recruiter. I'm focusing on tech and all of those kind of things. Do talk at conferences, speak with Hung. Do training sessions and all of that. And currently, I'm working for like the best company ever with the best culture, which is why I really enjoyed this topic, which is TokaBoka, who
Tokaboka.
will be doing the hybrid thing, but
Exactly.
maintaining the awesome culture. So I'm really actually excited to hear what everyone has to say on this.
Yeah, it should be a very interesting topic, and your contribution here will be very, very interesting as well. So great to have you on as co-host, and delighted that you're able to step in at short notice. Okay, quick word to our sponsors. Our sponsors today are Platypus.io. Aren't they just the best name ever for a software company? Platypus, one of my favorite animals. And Platypus is a company that measures culture. They're one of the really interesting businesses out there that are trying to figure out how we can quantify what culture really is. Rather than kind of leave it in the abstract, leave it in a PowerPoint, is it possible to kind of move it into a spreadsheet? You know, can we score what things sort of people and teams do in such a way that we can intelligently talk about those teams and whether, you know, certain personalities or certain behaviors might fit better in that team versus the other team? So part of the reason why I was hoping Nico would be able to join us because he was going to talk about that and potentially see how that applies in this current world. But anyway, if you're interested in this idea, in other words, how do we kind of match against behaviors rather than experiences or skills? How do people actually behave within groups and teams? Platypus.io is a product you should check out. I think they may still have a free trial going on, so you can even give it a whirl in the chat stream as I've just shared it. Okay, quick sound check. We are broadcasting, multicasting, I think, on Crowdcast. If you can hear me on Crowdcast, please say hello. Let me know in the chat stream there whether you can hear me okay. We are multicasting. I think we should be live on LinkedIn. It's a blank screen as always. So I'm guessing. If you can hear me on LinkedIn, give me a thumbs up. Let me know. We should be broadcasting on the Facebook group as well. So if that's the case, please let me know. You can hear me okay. Give me a thumbs up or a thumbs down. And we are live on Periscope. I actually trust Periscope more than anything else. I don't know why, but it seems to work very consistently. So if you can hear me on Periscope and on Twitter, give me a retweet or something. Okay, everyone's rocking. Well done, Tom. Tom, by the way, you're a hero for coming in. It's like 5 o'clock in the morning in California or something. There he is. So welcome everybody to the show. Let's get into what we usually do, which is a review of the newsletter. And Sophia, I'm not sure whether you read it in time because you know your late kind of emergency drop into the co-hosting. But I hope you had a chance to glance at the newsletter in some way, and you can make some commentary on it.
A little bit, and I must, you know, the first comment is obviously the Zoom background thing. So I decided to set up my ironing board here in front of my lovely wallpaper that we installed in this house we bought a year ago.
That's beautiful.
So that's my contribution to the Zoom background discussion. Isn't
that a beautiful background, though, guys? I mean, do you agree that this looks really great compared to this like off-white? This used to be like a magnolia, right? But it's been on the same wall for like 10 years. So obviously now it's like just a dirty white. And I've got a dead plant, and that's my background. So that's obviously not very good. Whereas you've got this wonderful, I think it should be dark as well. So that's also something that really works well. But Zoom backgrounds, we need to think about this because we can't be in a situation where we are neglectful of how we appear on video. Because if we don't actually pay attention to this, we're making potentially a pretty bad first impression. And I don't think you need to go completely crazy and spend tons of money on a studio and all the rest of it. Of course, you know, we're living at home, we're working at home. It doesn't have to be this way, but you have to think at least about the lighting. You know, you have to think about where your head is in the frame. Too many people are still like having the camera looking directly at their nostrils, right, when they're doing Zooms because they're on a laptop. And it's like, generally speaking, you have to think about it. Anyway, Sean Puri put together, I think, a very funny Twitter thread, which I've just shared it on the stream there, which is, what he thought were the best Twitter setups from his crew of tech bros, typically. So it's a bit mannish, but there you go. But there was lots of different sort of famous people with different Zoom setups, and you could just tell by your eyes alone which was better, right? You don't have to be an expert, but you thought, you know what, that's actually pretty bad for the level of sort of celebrity this person is. You would have anticipated a slightly better, more upgraded way of thinking about how he
I had lunch with a friend the other day, and she was talking about a colleague of hers that apparently was a bit special because she'd screenshotted the Zoom meeting and he forgot to blur his background. And it was like the background of some extreme hoarder TV show. There's things everywhere. There was a barbecue indoors in the background.
Oh, and no.
Piles of stuff on the. It is like horrific. So it's finding out a little bit too much, perhaps, about those colleagues and what their homes look like.
Sometimes I can understand the use of a fake background, and sometimes I can understand the blur. I think the blur is okay as well because it highlights your face. But I think that we have to do something better than just show like a big empty space with stuff happening in the back. Because as you say, you might just be like communicating bits of nonverbal information all the time with this, even unintentionally. And it makes a difference if you're like a recruiter and you're pitching a job to somebody, for instance. Impressionistically, that makes a difference. You know, how they feel about that experience is important. Is the audio, is the lighting okay? Can they see your face properly? Those types of things, you know, they make a difference. So, yeah, we need to pay a little bit of attention to how our backgrounds look and all the rest of it. And I know I need to upgrade.
But at the same time, with that, you're saying pitching a job and stuff. And I always do the majority of screening phone calls, phone screens. We can do it during walks. And with that, not everything has to be video and on screen. I think that's an important thing to remember as well.
Yeah.
Just so that you can relax a bit more about your background and not having, because not everything, if it's just about a conversation, What's the need for video? Why can't you just do it over a phone call?
Yeah, I think so. I think you're right. But those two, I think, are separate things. It's like if you agree with the candidate, for instance, let's do a call, audio only, then I think that's a totally different story. But let's say you've agreed to do a kind of a video screen in some way, I think you need to pay just a little bit of attention in terms of how you come across. Without it costing a huge amount, it's literally like lighting, get in front of a window or something. Those things make a difference. Okay, cool. What else, Sophia? What else was interesting and caught your eye in last week's newsletter?
What was it called? The How to Scale Up the Hiring by John. I just always agree with, and it's just always really, really good in there. And the one aspect in that article, I would say, is the whole defining what good looks like, because that's a conversation I always have with hiring managers, with a good old, okay, we want another candidate to compare with. And I'm like, well, you shouldn't be comparing, in a sense, the candidate to each other and picking the best one. You should be comparing against the needs you have and what we've decided we're looking for, whether somebody feels that, and then everybody who fills, you know, that need of what we're looking for, yeah, we can compare them against each other, but it's not a question of, well, you should be looking at, does this person fill the need or not? So what does good look like? I think it's really good to define that so that you can answer that. So because a lot of time you could interview somebody and it is a no, even if you have no other options, it's a no because they don't fill your needs. So it's not a question of then getting another. A lot of the time, in my experience, when hiring managers say they want a person to compare with, they actually mean no to this person. Just they feel bad about saying no without blaming it that person is better.
Yeah, exactly. So the weakest way to make a decision from a hiring manager is to say that's the best of all of the options, that they've got a number of people. And the strongest thing, the hardest thing to do is to say no, as you say, to where there's no other options. You've made the decision this person is not the right fit. Yeah.
And exactly. And it could be, you could have five candidates and none of them is the one you want to hire. So it means keep looking. So it's comparing and deciding against, you know, that what you've decided what good looks like, what it is that you're looking for, and comparing with that, not the candidates against each other, if you know what I mean.
I totally know what you mean. And John Blastalica, he gets to the point where he's like just a boringly good, isn't he? He's like,
it's just
John,
everything he writes, I'm like, yeah, that's true.
I know. It's like, John, listen. When you say you write one thing that's like a bit mediocre, because you know I want to be able to criticize it, have a different opinion. But no, he's really, really smart. Not only that, but he's actually one of these people I call a thinker doer. You know, he's not just a person that's sitting on the outside and writing about stuff. He's been at the head of talent at big companies. He's a consultant at these companies now, and he writes about it and talks about it. And I think, you know what, he's a person worth paying attention to. So if you don't follow John Blastalica, you should do that. He should actually come to Brain Food Lab at some point, actually. Problem is, he's in Seattle.
Yeah, but me at the same time, because I'd love to chat to him.
Yeah, yeah, I'd love to get him in. But the problem is, we've now locked it to 2 p.m. in the afternoon in UK time. And that's like way too early, usually, for PT. So I need to find him when he's like East Coast again, and then I'll be able to bring him on. That's why a lot of the California folks and Seattle people, we're not able to bring on as regularly as maybe we should, because I feel really bad about asking people to do it at a super early hour. Okay, one more before we kick off the topic to hand, Sophia.
Well, those are the two that stuck in my mind. I started reading the one with the GitHub robot one, but I think it was too late last night, so I kind of blurred out a little bit. But it sounded like it was going to be really interesting to see that. And I actually want to find a time where I have time to read that one in more detail.
It is quite interesting. Late. Yeah, it is quite interesting, but it is quite technical. So the guy who, if you didn't know, GitHub have rolled out something called GitHub Copilot, which is basically like an auto-correct and also a code predictor for people who are programming. So in other words, you're programming, you have this thing there, and it will tell you, oh, by the way, you know, 25,000 other people have solved this problem using this code, and it'll predict the code for you. And all the software engineers are looking at this and think, oh crap, potentially I'm out of work, because this thing is literally going to solve the problem with greater efficiency than I can manage. And also because it's tested with everyone else having done it before, it's likely to be less risky. So anyway, lots of conversations happening within software engineering about the implications of this particular software and obviously of later versions and improvements of it. This fellow said, okay, if GitHub Copilot was all like all that, is it going to actually pass a coding challenge to get a job? And he piped it through, I think, something that Facebook might throw at him or whatever, and it gets into quite technical things. He analyzes it and stuff, and the answer is the answer in the end is no. But you know what? He was close, or it was close. So at some point, you would imagine that this thing might complete, which is a huge thing also to talk about when you how you assess software engineers. Like we usually send engineers a coding exam or a coding project to do at home, for instance. That's quite a typical thing. I mean, with a software like Copilot, is that a viable way to assess an engineer anymore? It's like a legit
question. Yeah, but then you've got to follow that by going through how did you do, why did you pick this solution, how do you go about it? Isn't just the solution and setting it in, it's the discussion afterwards.
What if the person just said, yeah, I just installed Google Copilot and did it for me? I legitimately you could say, hey, that's a problem solver. Boom. Hi. No.
Yeah. Why not?
But it's a really interesting, it's a challenge for the assessment side. It's also a challenge to a large degree in terms of how software engineering might be performed. So I'm tracking this one quite closely because I think it's quite significant. And by the way, there's related stuff happening in things that are a little bit closer to recruiting, particularly in terms of copywriting, for instance. Mm-hmm. You can see AI-driven copywriting that seems to outperform copywriting done by marketers, for instance. You know, what headlines get more clicks and all this. That will start bleeding into the production of copy from stuff that we do. So very, very important we keep an eye on where this this stuff is going. Okay, let's move on to the topic at hand. So Sophia, we talk about building teams, what are the techniques to build sort of culture where people are working in different places? And I want to even tackle the idea whether it's possible to do or not. With your experience right now at Tokoboko, which I understand is like a distributed stroke in-office type scenario, so a classic example of how hybrid works. What's your view on this before we bring on Murdcat and Melanie and Julian?
See, the thing is, I worked at Toka for a few months before the pandemic. So I was at the office first and got to know a lot of the people. So I got to feel the culture. And the thing with Toka, it has a really strong atmosphere. Like I remember walking through the doors the first time and you just feel it. Literally, it was like not a person there. I just opened the door and walked in and you just feel it in the air. So obviously you're going to miss that working from home. And I do miss it working from home. But I think they still manage in the like bigger team meetings and the way we do things, but it is really tricky. And I think the challenge is the whole kind of having and adding that, like is it building the culture when it's never been at the office and building that hybrid for somebody who's never there. But I spoke to our experienced manager who deals with that and partly she created the office and she should be on here. I should invite her. No, because she's
listening. Get her on. I'll be happy to speak to her.
She thought that the culture was like the physical office. She thought that was what contributed to the company's culture. However, she's now changed her mind with the working from home when she can see that the Tokoboko culture is still strong and is still present without people being at the office. But her initial thought was the culture is in the physical office and that's it.
Yeah, it's interesting. We're learning a lot, aren't we? And you've actually raised, I think, quite a nuanced point, which is what is the difference between workers that have prior experience of working together in an office that have now gone to a shifted mode or a mixed mode or what have you? Or compared to let's say a completely new person who has no experience of this and may not have actually met any of the work colleagues. But are you escaping a fire, Sophia?
I realized I locked the door so my daughter couldn't come in. So she was
oh crap. Yeah, let's sort that out, man. Is she? Is everything okay?
No, she, well, she's almost no 10. I mean, she can handle herself. She had big instructions not to go into the lounge, and I locked her out, so that was my fault.
Good Lord. Was that a small element of parental neglect there, Sophia? It was like...
It's your fault.
I feel really bad. Please apologize to your daughter for me for causing this disruption. Okay, let's bring on our guests. I think we should give this a shot and see what they think, because I think everyone's in slightly different boats. We all have different solutions for sure. So let's see how we go. Let's bring Julian on firstly. A good friend of mine, Julian. He's got some interesting things to say. We've got Murkan on here. Let's bring him on also. I'm going to just bring Melanie on as well. No point leaving Melanie off screen. We'll just get her on here as well.
Get them all on.
And we should do it. I think we can max out a 6 with this plan I have. Maybe it's even more now. I don't know. But I'm paying the top tier. I'm the top tier payer for... it's Murkan. How are you doing, sir?
Can you hear me well?
Yeah, we'll hear you perfectly, man.
Okay, nice. Hi, I'm good. And I'm cool. In the office.
Yeah, and there's Melanie as well. Great to see you, Melanie.
Hi, great to see you.
Cool.
I'm just checking my very pale black background after that conversation earlier.
It's all right. It's like mine, you know, Magnolia.
Have some wallpaper.
Yeah, what the hell are we doing? I need to obviously like get a graffiti artist to do something here. But okay, let's introduce ourselves real quick. Murkan, for the people who don't know you, can you quickly introduce yourself, who you are, what it is you do?
Yes, my name is Mertcan, and you can also call me Mert if it's easier. Okay. Born and raised in Istanbul, moved to Berlin 8 years ago. Have been working at Blinkist for the last 2 years. And I am mainly responsible for inclusion, diversity, and belonging, now taking on internal communications, and have been doing recruitment.
Perfect, perfect. And you've written some really interesting blogs, which have made it into the newsletter, actually. So really, really, I think both your work and the ethos at Blinkist is going to be very interesting to discuss here. Okay. So fantastic to have you on. And Melanie, for the people who don't know you, can you introduce yourself, who you are, and what it is you do?
Thanks, Hung. Hi, everyone. I'm Melanie Hayes. I'm the Chief People Officer at Harvey Nash Group. So Harvey Nash Group is a part technology outsourcing business and also a technology recruiting firm. So a real kind of combination of both. And I actually joined the organization in the middle of lockdown.
Yep. So personal experience of moving into it. And also Harvey Nash is not a small business. Like people who are in the recruiting business, I'm sure know Harvey Nash very well. One of the big global staffing providers out there. I'm very interested to know how they are going to deal with this concept of building culture in a hybrid way, because from my experience of agency work, it's like always been very much in office, right? It's like the office culture was the thing. And you couldn't take a day off. I remember even if you were like, you know, seriously hungover and, you know, should be nowhere near any phone, the requirement was to come in and then get sent home, rather than, take it your own decision to do that. So huge cultural shift, I think, in agency world. Okay, let's kick off with this idea, building culture through in a distributed with a hybrid model, should we say. How is it different from what it was before? If you've gone from a situation where predominantly people were in the office, even if you might have been flexible and very nice and all the rest of it, let's face it, prior to COVID, 95% of most people were in the office most of the time. And most of your culture was built around, you know, stuff happening in office, of course. How does it now shift when, you know, half the stuff might happen in the office, but then, you know, you got a load of people that may not want to be there, or people are making their own decisions as to when to arrive? Mert, we'll go to you first on this. What are your thoughts?
I think the biggest part for Blinkist was changing the mindset, because I remember it was like 2 years ago when we had like one person working full time at Blinkist in office saying that, hey, I want to go back home to my home country. We were like, you know what, you have to leave. We can't. It's not going to be possible. 3 months later, not because of like office situation, but because of visa issues and like, you know, the tax and like, you know, all these like legal stuff. But 3 months later, we realized that like, everyone has to go home. You know, there's no one gonna be at the office. And I think the change of mindset, like thing that it's actually possible to work from home, was a big wake up call. Not that Blinkist was always office atmosphere, but because we always allowed people to work from home, but our culture was mainly built on in-office activities. And immediately we thought, we're going to lose our culture.
Can you give us an example of some of the in-office stuff you did pre-COVID, that it was one of the real reasons, you know, this is the stuff you were proud of? People were proud of this, right? They were proud of, hey, this is what happens in our office. So can you tell us a few of those things?
I'm actually in one of those places. This is our canteen. So this is where we serve healthy free lunch to our employees. And this was one of the main reasons that everyone was coming to the office. And I am right now in the kitchen. And when we lost kitchen, our engagement survey went down. It was a very big loss. When we lost our get-togethers, which we were very famous for, engagement went down. And then we start constantly thinking, okay, what other methods we can bring in to make sure that the engagement and connection is rising up.
Very interesting. And by the way, free food is nothing to sneeze at, because, you know, it's one of those things which now we kind of like may trivialize as a perk or whatever, that's not important. But back in the day when these things came out, it was actually really important. High quality food, healthy food served to you in office, companies also investing in a kitchen. You know, that's a big sign of commitment to the employee base. They're not just sending you out to pret-a-manger to get a sandwich, you know, that kind of thing. It's like, okay, we care about you. So there's lots of things being signaled by the commitment to have a kitchen. But then suddenly, of course, you can't have that and you can't employ a chef. That person needs to be at home also. So that thing, entire thing goes, big chunk of the company culture, quote unquote, might disappear also. Can you give us one more, like pre-COVID thing that was culturally, I wouldn't say unique, but culturally, you know, something you're proud of at Blinkist?
Our level ups. So basically we would have it every quarter, a day dedicated, all of us meeting in person, doing activities, workshops, talking about strategy, all involved. And when we had to turn this into a virtual one, you realize that again, the people who were engaging in building up strategy were going down because people were not engaged as much as they would be in person in front of Zoom. So that was also something that we had to change our gears to say, okay, how we can make people more than participants in strategy to really engaging and actively contributing.
Yeah, really good. I'm sure there's more examples to come with this, Mert. Very interesting. What's interesting, folks, is that some of the stuff that you really valued, like the things that you could trust, you know, you could trust that would always be the case, suddenly they were no longer either available, or when you tried to do them virtually, they actually had a totally different impact or a poorer impact than you anticipated, and you had to start from scratch. Mel, let's go to you. You've got a different experience on this because you've obviously arrived at a company in the middle of this phase where, you know, you didn't see what was before or after. What kind of sense did you get? Were you given a mission to remake the culture at the company? Or was it a case of, look, we actually don't know what's going on. You just have to ride this horse, whatever direction it might take us. How was your experience when you arrived in that company?
I think it was because obviously I moved from a recruiting organization to another recruiting organization, and I think the experience was quite similar. So you had managers who were very used to 5 days in the office. I mean, I started in recruitment a very, very long time ago, before kind of moving through to HR, and you would be in the office, you know, what the first person to leave would be considered to be the one that was slacking, right? Even if it was 6 o'clock. And I'm not saying this is what it was like at Harvey Nash, but very much a 5 day in the office, trying to do a bit of flexibility here and there to all being on screen. And people overdid the let's do drinks, let's do quizzes. I think every organization did this, right? How do we create stickiness? So now we're going to do a quiz. I remember doing weekly workouts with my old team. So join a workout on a Tuesday morning, and people just got fatigued. So I think I joined Harvey Nash at the point when people were fatigued with it. And so the thing that we've been really focusing on, and I'm sure lots of people feel this, when you're on a Teams call or a Zoom call, it's quite often all task. You're in the call, it's task, and then you're on to the next call. And all of those, the kind of the conversations and the chatter doesn't really happen in the same way. So I think that there wasn't really anything in place that was structured across the entire organization, just from a communication perspective, from an engagement perspective, to the point where we'd even started, I know Megan, you were talking about engagement scores. We only actually at the beginning of this year put in an engagement platform. What we have seen with a lot of the activity that we have done is we've seen our engagement score go up from +6 to +39 since we've put the survey in. But that has been a combination of things. The one thing that has been consistent is once our managers got over the initial, how do I lead teams? How do I connect with teams virtually? That actually them checking in with people has probably been more regular now. So I'm kind of, I mean, look, I think you need face-to-face interaction, and I have lots and lots of concerns about people working virtually, about mental health and well-being, and about how people are learning. And I'm probably going deeper than you're asking, Hung, but I think most managers have been used to, regardless of the organization, who've been used to an in-the-office culture, have had to go on a real journey to understand how do I trust that people are performing, trust that people are doing their job, but also understand when I need to give them support, because that in itself is even a difficult thing for people to understand. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it totally makes sense. And one of the features we should talk about is how ill-equipped managers have been to handle necessarily this transition. Because I mean, managers generally have been undertrained in any case prior to COVID and all the rest of it. Most managers have simply been, you know, expert individual contributors who've been elevated up to manage this mini team. And that's been the way it's been. There hasn't been any kind of identification of, oh, this person has got particularly good management skill set. And with the shift to remote, you know, there's been zero support to that. Also, they just be said, you've got to keep managing your team. But how do you do that? Like, we don't actually know. And I think a lot of the things that we've maybe made a mistake on is an attempt to, you know, put unqualified managers to try and fix a problem that we don't even know enough about how to fix. Like a lot of the Zoom fatigue emerges, I think, because there's a kind of an overdoing of manager check-in sometimes. Like when a manager checks in and I'm an employee, I'm probably thinking I need to say something interesting for this manager because he or she's thinking, is Hung productive? Or is Hung doing his work? Is he okay? And I'm like, I'm okay. So I need to somehow demonstrate that. And that just elevates a stress level to me. Whereas there maybe needs a different way to deal with it. Go on. So, Sophia, you got something to say?
I'm thinking what Melanie was saying as well. I think it's the other way around that's really important to remember. Not just the whole kind of, are people working when I'm not looking? It's like, are people working too much? Because it really is that difficult in going from work to not work, to actually shutting down and letting go of work and being home when you are home all the time. So there's also that ability to spot those people working too much, working too long hours and not letting go. I think that is even, I would say, even more important.
You can add to that as well, Sophia. I think it's a brilliant topic, right? Because actually, if we want true flexibility, we need to understand that it's not a 9 to 5:30 culture or a 9 to 5 or an 8, you know, however people work. And being accepting that the conditions of lockdowns and COVID impact across different geographies, right, has meant that people have had to try and parent. People have had to try and take on caring responsibilities. And what I think happened with some managers is that, oh, I'm getting an email from somebody at 9 o'clock at night and they shouldn't be sending emails at that time. And what we need to help people to do if we want to truly allow flexibility is to understand that it's actually somebody's hours might not be fixed and they might do a bit here and then they might go and do the pickup and then they might do their work later. And if they do email, you don't have to respond.
Exactly. There's that too. It's like, just because somebody sends you an email late at night, that doesn't mean you have to respond to it there and then. But it's also then letting people know that it is okay to wait, so that there is that culture that you don't have to respond in such a quick manner, that there is that flexibility. But at the same time, making sure, is it because they're working late because they took that break to pick up the kids, or is it they're working late because they can't let go? So it's that really that balance of understanding why is that email sent at 9.
So that's really difficult to capture, isn't it? Like the sentiment of the employee is very, very difficult to capture, even based on the activity that's going on. Like for me, I can send an email at any time or message at any time, and I don't really care. And I know sometimes I can come out at an odd hour for people and stuff because I just walk up at 3 o'clock in the morning, you know, and it's fine. I'm not like super stressed. This is all right. I might as well get rid of this. But other people may not have that. Like I think Annette was talking about, you know, sacrosanct barriers. I was in True London a couple of days ago where your crew were very much present, Mel. And we had a track where it was how is remote working for single parents? And we had single parents with obviously a huge amount of domestic responsibilities, and how they manage this type of process. Super interesting. And most of the people there said there was actually blocked out time, very religiously organized, even if it was free time to be blocked in. So in other words, there was one lady, Beth, I think, she said, look, she booked her own calendar in order to create blocks where nothing was going to happen, because she was in an elevated job and, you know, her job is simply dealing with demands all the time. I think our relationship with calendars are going to change. Our relationship with inboxes need to change. That, I think, is as much on the individual as it is with management and all the rest of it. Anyway, let's go on to talk about this idea of creating culture with people who are in different places. Like, for instance, I would say prior to COVID, you could almost rely a little bit on the existence of an office, and people would just come in and they would become enculturated because of the presence that are always there, the amount of time they were there, the other people that would help educate them in terms of values, behaviors, etc. Now it's a slightly different situation, isn't it? So how do we make sure that culture is still being built and maintained with people in different modes? When we start hiring people for the first time that have never had the full on-premise experience, how do we make sure they are still Blinkist people or Harvey Nash people or Tucker Bocker people? Do we let that ambition go? Is it too much to ask and say, okay, listen, you know, maybe this thing was very much tied to there being a physical place? Thoughts on this, Mert? You got anything to say?
I think this is the dangerous part, because you want to give flexibility, but you also want to make sure that it's not turning into chaos. So in a Blinkist case, I think there are like fun things that you can create, all these culture aspects, but I think focus most on structures and like more like, you know, I don't want to call them regulations, but like kind of creating a guidelines. For example, code of conduct has become more important. How you speak, how you talk, when you do it, what you respect and what do you not respect, all these things became more important. Documentation has become a huge topic, like how do you document things. And what we also understand was, of course, people value culture and culture is very important, but in general, when we looked at our engagement surveys, we realized that there was like one thing that people really wanted to have, and that's not to miss out things, not to miss out information. And that piece has become very important. So how do you start documenting in a place where you don't have all your team members in one meeting room? How do you make sure that everyone engages in an equal level?
Okay, so I think that's the first big learning point, is the sense of not accessing the full story because you're away from the office and other people are in the office, and you're thinking, okay, have I really got everything I need to know? Because maybe they're then having the meeting after the meeting, right? Suddenly the main people are having coffee together for 3 hours after the meeting apparently is being discussed. Like, what am I missing? And you're saying a solution to this is you just have to up the level of documentation required and have a single place where this is where the truth is, everyone can access. Yeah.
Exactly, so that people don't have like this FOMO feeling, so that they are like, and then they're like start working at 9 because they want to make sure that they know everything. That is very important. And the third thing that we really paid attention was like this, which was dear to our culture, is the serendipity moments. You know, like the way that you would like touch with someone and like talk and like learn something and create something. So we tried to also build like the serendipity moments in a virtual setup, which also helped our team to cope with that.
How do you do that?
So we have some, we built some rituals. For example, we do have a calendar blocked for everyone at one moment where you don't necessarily have to go into the invite, but it says, for example, hashtag communicate directly. And that moment you're like, okay, oh, this is a reminder for me to give someone a feedback. And then people can choose or not choose to do that. We also, in our all hands virtual, on hands, do speed dating. So we send people randomly to breakout rooms, and then you spend 4 minutes with that person, talk about, and we ask a specific question every week, where you get to know people which you don't necessarily meet on a regular basis.
Okay, I love these ideas. Don't we love these ideas, folks? What do you think? I particularly like the speed, the randomized speed dating. Yeah. That's a regular ritual, right, Mert? This is not something you do episodically. It's like, hey, every week on Thursday, whatever time, boom, this happens. Everyone needs to down tools. You're literally going to have a meeting with this person who we're going to, you know, I don't know. Is there some sort of picking out the hat type of way?
Yes, you have to be careful. You have to be careful because there is like this introverts and extroverts concept coming in as well, because there might be people saying that, you know what, I actually don't want to do that. And some people might also think, you know what, actually, my job and my identity at this work is not so related to engaging with other people. So make sure that this is not a must have.
It's an optional.
Obligation. It's optional. If you want to do it, you do it.
Is that working though? I just want to touch on that a little bit, because there is a tension on this, isn't there, Mert, where you give individual freedom of choice, but in large part, sometimes culture building is kind of submission to the wider community. It's like, okay, maybe I'm not like super up for doing this, but you know what, as part of the group, this is the expectation. My responsibility is to be present in these spaces. Like a lot of things I don't enjoy doing. And you know, if I was in a team, you're gonna have to do them because you can't be seen not to be doing that, whereas other people are. So how do you measure this? I mean, was it a strategic decision you guys made to say, look, we're going to give everyone a choice, or did you test it in some way?
We tested. In the beginning, it was we asked everyone to join. And then there was like, I also act as like a trusty person, and I would hear all these like, you know, introverts coming to me and saying, hey, I don't feel safe. I don't feel secure. And at Blinkist, we have a lot of introverts. And they are key to our culture. And you don't want to alienate these people, because these people are already struggling to raise their voices in a setup that is virtual, and you need them. So we then decided to go a more optional base. And there you could see that people start joining naturally. Once you see that others are doing it, they also feel more secure, more comfortable. And I think giving the people the right to choose is more fitting to the hybrid way of working, in my opinion. Because we're talking about flexibilities, we're talking about people choosing their own style of working. And some people might, I think it's a very normal thing to say, you know what, I just want to come in. I just want to start at 9 and I just want to leave at 5. This is my place of work. I want to make an income. I don't want to be friends with people. And that is completely respectable notion.
Okay. There's another thing I love that you said there, Mert, that final point, very, very important. Like we talk a lot about the company culture, how wonderful it is. And we're a little bit almost insistent that everyone has a great time and feels completely, you know, fulfilled their entire lives literally in this. We even talked about, I even use that language, you know, are you a Blinkist person or are you a Harvey Nash person and all the rest of it? Well, actually, there's some people who may not want to be that person. You know, that person may just be, the job is the job, and they're very, you know, very competent and capable of doing the job, but they're going to leave it at the door, or they're going to leave it at the metaphorical door these days, and they're going to get on doing what they like to do elsewhere. So yeah, maybe we also need to understand that aspect, where, you know, we to fully respect someone's position is also to respect that they don't want that much in. So
and I would say my interpretation, because that sounds similar to Tucker Bucker's stance on things as well, like, that is, at Blinkist, you can be yourself. That's the thing. You can be an introvert. You can be an extrovert. It's not like at Blinkist, we're extroverts. Everyone can be who. I talk about this very much as well, about people being individuals and being allowed to be who they are, which means they might not want to participate in everything. They're offered to, they're allowed to, but you're also allowed not to, which enables people to be who they are and be an individual person and not be the mass of, we are Blinkists, we are Tuckerbonians, we are, you know, and still feel that they're a Blinkist, but they're not like everyone else just because of that.
Uncomfortable question for you, Mert, before I go to Mel on this. So you have a bunch of people that want to do this and a bunch of people who don't, which I thought was a great idea, is for this kind of engineered serendipity. Do you measure the number of participants versus the people who don't? And is there a number where you feel, hang on, this is not working anymore?
Yeah, we do have it. And the reason that we do it, we want to see whether it makes sense to have it or not. For example, we are around 150 people right now. And we have like so many people in different parts of the world. For example, for speed dating, you would have around like 30, 40 people participating, which is still good because the aim for speed dating is to make the new joiners find their connections. Because I have been at this office, I know so many people already, but for the new joiner to find that connection with a random person is very important to us. That's why it's also more an initiative to make sure that the new joiners also get into the culture slowly through these speed datings.
Because at the office, they might find that random person at lunch.
Yeah. Well, in the office, you inevitably do so. You're going through a certain pathway in the office. You're going to bump into people, even if you don't say hello, but you still exchange information by sight or whatever it is, whereas that is not necessarily always the case. It can be very intimidating to join a company-wide Slack channel. There's 150 people there, and that's actually quite a small company. Imagine if you go to Harvey Nash, what, 20,000 people, 100,000 people? How many people in there, Mel?
2,500.
Right, not as many as that, 2,500, a huge channel like that, I'd be terrified, right? So, Mel, go to you on this. Mert was talking about these initiatives to try and make sure that people feel included. Is there anything that you've experimented with at Harvey Nash that you can say, you know what, I'm pretty confident this is a good idea, this has worked quite well?
So we've done a few things, actually, and some for all the reasons that we've just talked about. So we've used a tool which is kind of like a VR tool, networking tool. I think it's called Be Together. And anyway, you're like a little animation. You go in, but when you move up close to people, you can hear the conversation, and you move away, it kind of fades out. It's like being at an event. And that worked really well with some of our teams, to the point where they used it for social as well. In one of our businesses did. But then, I mean, I was several times asked to go on it, and I was like, no, I'm not really into that. And, you know, I prefer face. I'm the person that regardless has been going into the office, even when there's only been four people in there, twice a week, not every day, but twice a week I'm into the office because I just want to change a scene and I just actually want the commute. So we've tried that sort of stuff. It's worked and not worked for some people. I really like this allowing people to select themselves because some people are comfortable and some are not. But we've done other things to connect, and it was really interesting just around the communication. So we started with too much communication. So we were told you were sending us too much stuff. We're not reading it because we just don't know how to kind of distill down what we need to focus on. So we've really focused on producing things that mean that people are informed about what's going on in the business, broader business, and not just the region that they're sat in. And that we are starting to do other things. But one of the things that we've done that I think has been really well received, and we've put this in place globally, although via time zones, so time zones are impacted, is just learning for people. So we call them power hours, and they're kind of a bit like this, right? You log on and there are some speakers and somebody takes a topic and people then ask questions. And that seems to have connected more of our people across regions than ever before, because historically I think it was much more siloed. On a local level, some of the teams are really small, right? You're talking about teams of 6 to 12 people. So getting that connection in a smaller group has been a lot easier.
Yeah. So the couple of things you said that are really interesting, Mel, particularly kind of provisioning like a learning opportunity. So similar to having a regular thing going on, it's an optional turn up. You know what, you might learn something, have a schedule of stuff that's happening. And then bonus would be they may actually learn something. But the main reason why you're doing it is to build this sense of connections with other people and other colleagues and team members, similar in many respects to how people get together on Brain Food Live. I mean, it's not a big deal. It's just a live stream, right? But, you know, we're all going to end up connecting with each other. We're all going to end up talking to each other. I remember going to the event the other day, and there was two people. I overheard them and said, oh, haven't we met before? And I knew they were both guests on Brain Food. but they didn't clock until eventually said, oh my God, we've actually been on the same show. And then they had a good conversation. And it was great to see that, which actually gives us a perfect segue to do an exercise I want to try now. Because we tried this at the end of every show, beginning last couple of weeks, but it worked really well. If you want to continue this conversation after this show is completed, what I want everyone to do is basically share your LinkedIn into whatever chat stream you're in right now. And then everyone has a record of whoever else is listening to this conversation, and then they can connect with each other, and then please continue the conversation. Because I assume that if you're here and you're listening to this, you're probably thinking around these challenges. And it may be that, you know, you don't want to be overly dependent on just what you're hearing on screen with the four of us. It may be you want to connect with other people and share some information from there as well. So share your LinkedIn into the chat stream and then make that available for everyone else. That means that people are going to connect up to your desire, so to speak. And then you can go ahead and have those conversations and continue. Okay, cool. By the way, do that on LinkedIn as well if you want. I don't mind. Like, as if I control LinkedIn. I
mean, yes, you do.
I permit you to use LinkedIn in this way. But yeah, go ahead and do that if you want. Connect with each other. Okay, so got a couple of techniques here. I'm going to make a list of them. So we've talked about, let's do the speed dating. I think that's a great option. We've talked about the leveling up, which is kind of the... is that the same as no leveling up is speed dating, isn't it? You converted the leveling up to a speed date. No.
Level up is like a strategy.
Right. Do you still do those, or is it like you still do them? Okay. So, and yeah, that is virtually. A case of getting everyone in a kind of a town hall style thing. They can all just pitch in with other stuff that's going on. Mel, you talked about power outgone.
I was just going to say, do you use the break? I'm quite interested because that's a large group of people, right? Do you use the Zoom breakout rooms or the Teams breakout rooms just to put people into different groups? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So usually what the day looks is it's also a little bit more, let's say, top down. So we already decide what's going to be shared on that day. So that there's a keynote from the CEO. There's what is the strategy going to be? And then we have sessions where we put people into breakout rooms and say, okay, you know what? A workshop. Go and find a solution for this and that.
Brilliant.
That's how we do it.
Sorry,
No, I think Sophia was about to say something as well about techniques to build culture. I mean, is there anything you've experimented with that you want to share with us here, Sophia?
Well, we do something similar to the speed dating thing. That was something we actually did when we were at the office. We have a lunch lottery. So every week we pull four names out of a hat and they get to go have lunch together on the house. So the company pays for that lunch. And that was physical when everyone was at the office. So that meant you could actually meet and have lunch with people you wouldn't necessarily normally have lunch with. But now the way we do it is obviously still happens virtually and everyone gets food sent to their house. There's still four names or three names now get pulled out of a hat and those three get lunch sent to their house and they have lunch together over Zoom. So it still happens, that thing. So you meet across, because I think that's what's lacking with the working from home, the meeting across teams.
That's a really good one. We've done that. We've done the sending lunches and people ordering delivery if they're in London and then just sitting and chatting. It's been brilliant.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. And by the way, the connection of food and kind of amity is very, very close. In other words, if you break bread with somebody, actually that's, you know, biochemically things change in your head. And it's a really powerful way of connecting, even if it kind of sometimes can look awkward when you're shoveling your masala into your face on a screen. But, you know, it might be worth doing for this purpose.
And also it's optional, just like with Blinkist. I don't know if anyone's opted out, but anyone who doesn't want to have their name in there, they don't have to.
Yeah. Again, the optionality thing, I think, comes in very powerfully from everything you're saying. I'm now going to say something which I'm sure is very unpopular, but I've got some sympathy with the view. You tell me what you think of this. So let's say I think, okay, I reckon it's not tenable to have too many options, because what's going to happen is there's going to be too much individuality. It's going to be too hard to just manage it. And eventually you're going to get people deciding that they're never involved. And then suddenly, is that going to be okay? I want to just do a top-down rule saying this is happening and I'm going to risk the attrition. In fact, I'm not only going to risk the attrition, I'm going to actually actively trigger the attrition because I want to try and change the culture of the business so it's always like this. Now, I'm a terrible person, obviously. So leaving aside that assessment, which I totally agree with, what do you think of that method of doing? Is it kind of like accepting that the culture is going to change, therefore the people are going to change, and we're just going to commit to doing it this way? It's very similar to the JP Morgan guy or the Goldman Sachs guy saying, we're coming back to the office. What he's doing is saying, you know what, we're going to trigger attrition because there's going to be a lot of people are doing it. We're going to accept it. And we're going to just say, you know what, in future, we're going to recruit people that are happy with this circumstance. How do you think about that approach? And is it something you think is a viable one, even if you might not agree with it? Mert, we'll go to you.
I think it's okay. You know, if that's the culture that you want to build, go for it. I think it's going to work definitely for that culture that you want to build. It's very risky, in my opinion, because if it works, it's going to be amazing. But if it doesn't work, you're going to lose some engagement.
But it's a bit like you're saying, Hang, you're going to attract all the people who want that way. Like, personally, I would never work for a fully remote company because I'm, you know, I want to be at the office like Melanie. I want people. Yeah. I need that. Like the other day, we have to say in advance that we're going to go to the office and we have to have a real reason. And I just said, look, I'm going to go to the office first. The real reason is I'm bored out of my brains. That's my reason. That's my production reason. Let me in. And I was allowed because there weren't that many people coming in that day. So we were just controlling that not everybody comes in. So I would never choose to work for a fully remote company. I just wouldn't do it.
And by the way, I think that's what's going to shake down, isn't it? Where companies, I think we're going through a period where we're experimenting and learning, but eventually we'll settle down to understand what style of business we're in. And eventually people are going to just end up gravitating to those things. And maybe that will be very obvious, more obvious and explicitly stated in things like employer branding to say, you know what, we're an on-premise company. People might say that suddenly. I haven't seen it yet, but I think probably you need to start saying it if that's the case. Or you're going to say, we're fully distributed. That's more sayable. The companies are saying this. And then others might say, hey, we're actually a Tuesday to a Thursday company. Or, you know, we're a different, you know, start naming days when you're in the office and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I think that's going to give job seekers some variety, I hope.
I asked a question, actually, because I'm a kind of part blended, part in, part out person. And that's the way I think we should go as an organization. But I did a session, I was actually in Leeds. That's the north of England, for anybody who's not in the UK, on Wednesday. And I asked three of our graduate hires, they were all in for a session. And I said to them, tell me about the experience of being in or being out. And they were talking about this learn, but it's a sales environment. The learn by osmosis, being able to sit next to somebody who can give them advice on a call, listening to experienced people who they're then able to say, oh, I really love the way that they did that. So I'm going to take that and use that next time. Does not happen when you're at home and you're on a call unless you start using software where somebody's listening into your calls, right? So,
you know what, Mel? We actually had a conversation dedicated to this last week, and all the Gen Zers that we got on screen, because we spoke to a bunch of people who are kind of early entry talent now. They're coming in for the first time. They're doing like virtual internships. And that was a very consistent thing they were saying. They were saying they wanted to be in the office, not only some of the time, almost all of the time. So I wonder whether we might be kind of moving towards a situation where, you know, behaviors of employees are going to be different in terms of their experience. And maybe predominantly offices are going to get younger, so to speak, more junior people coming in because they want to learn. And as people get more experience, you kind of graduate out and the office becomes more like a campus extension, so to speak. You don't like this.
We're going to try a new office. We're going to create, like Tucker's doing a new office. We're basically outgrowing our office. So even if we were to say, let's all come back to the office, we don't all physically fit in there anymore. So we can't all come back to the office because we've outgrown them during a pandemic. But we're doing a new office and it's not going to be called the Tucker. It's going to be called the Tucker Campus. So just be a word there.
Maybe that's the future, yeah?
I mean, I have a different view on that entirely. And I did another session with a leadership team where they were thinking about ways of working. And somebody said to me, well, I'm really experienced and I'm really productive. I don't need to be in the office. Nobody needs to manage me. So therefore, I shouldn't have to come in. And I said, that's an incredibly selfish statement, because there was somebody who was more experienced and more senior in the office when you were learning your role, who you helped, who learned from listening to you. And by you saying, well, I'm just not going to come in, those people that are early in their career are missing out on all of this experience that you have. So I do think if you're in an environment where actually it helps to develop future generations, that you have a responsibility to come and pass on that learning.
Really important point to make. Like, what is the responsibility to the group? And if you're deciding of yourself, hey, you know, I prefer to kick it back and do what I need to do, you're denying your knowledge for other people. And I can understand from a selfish point of view why that may be a rational thing to do. I mean, just to take it from a even more negative sense, you might say, you know what, I'm quite a valuable person in the company. What would I want to share with these people? You know, if I keep it to myself, perhaps they'll, you know, invest in me and make sure that I can't leave. So there's going to be problems down the road. So maybe the Goldman Sachs person who's saying, you know what, let's just cut, you know, pull a Band-Aid off and do it that way. Maybe he's seen something.
It's not only the learning stuff, it's hearing things, and it's just like getting sometimes a quick yes and no will take you freaking 24 hours on Slack to get like a yes. But if I just see something, okay, Melanie, yes or no? Yes, we'll do that. And I can go do it. I don't have to wait for the answer on Slack to come in when somebody realizes they have, you know, missed my message.
I'm going to say this one more time because I know Tom's listening and he loves this, but it's osmotic information transfer. So again, Tom, that's for you. The idea that, you know, by osmosis, like not by formal training, you're literally eavesdropping to a large degree, just hearing stuff ambiently, and you're learning how to do stuff. Or even from that, you're able to maybe identify people who know the solution. Like sometimes you're working on something technical or whatever, and you just hear out of earshot, actually, this person might know it. And then, you know, you pick it up. Not obvious on things like profiles, right? We don't know our colleagues' expertise per se, other than their job titles. I mean, we don't actually know deeply what they could help fix. Yeah. So I think there's a lot to be said for all of this. It sounds like we're heading towards a direction which I don't think we agree on. You know, we're not saying let's go back to the office, but we are saying there's going to be trade-offs with not doing that. And we're at the point where we're beginning to be more aware of. Let's explore this idea of this kind of virtual space. Because I do like the idea of having something in between in-person and the flat screen Zoom. So I think the stuff you're talking about is almost inspired from gaming mechanics in many respects. As a figure on a screen, it's like a platform game or something, and you're kind of exploring stuff. I like that idea, but you're saying, personally, you're saying, Mel, it didn't quite chime for you in some sense. So it may not be something that would be globally, you can't implement it or throughout the entire business and say, this is how we're going to do it now.
I think it was more about the fact that when we implemented it, we did it as part of an external networking event. And I was kind of a bit like, I'm going to go up as a little meme and start waving to somebody and then not actually, you know, it's physically that's easier to do, to go and chat to people that you don't know, right? But
yep.
But I do think, because I know there is more development when you're on this sort of tool, I do think the ability, somebody said to me the other day, actually what they did when they had a new starter and we were in lockdown is they logged into Teams and they just worked with Teams on.
All the time, yep.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's a very, very basic version of it, right? But I think it's that's how they, as a small team, got connection. They were able to just ask those quick questions that Sophia's calling about, that actually when you get 75 Teams messages or chats coming up during the day and you're on calls all day, you don't answer until the evening. They were able to just ask those simple questions and listen to each other when they were on calls. But they would then still mute each other on calls. So I think yes, but I think you've got to get people to warm up to that sort of stuff, because not everybody will naturally, and it goes back to what Morgan was saying, not everybody will naturally want to do that.
I totally get it. What are your thoughts, Sophia and Mert, the idea of having like a different interface to try and build connections. So we know what video is like, we know what in-person's like, but some sort of game, some sort of, you know, a thing where you're represented in a screen. And maybe that then goes into, you know, what Facebook is doing with Metaverse and all those types of things. I mean, do you think those are things worth exploring, or do you think it's a little bit gimmicky?
I was going to say the word gimmicky before you said it. So I think that's my stance on it.
Fair enough. How about you, Mert? Are you?
What I think, I think every team functions differently. Every company functions differently. Whatever works for you, try it. There is no right. There is no wrong. There is no one way. And also applying one fits all doesn't work in this. What works at Blinkist might be completely disastrous in another company. What works in another company might be completely disastrous at Blinkist. And I think we have to find, like, my advice is not copy the big, you know, these companies who are very proud and they're like, we are fully remote and we're amazing. And copying that might not be good, iterating it, but like adapting it to your own culture, your own setup might be the best way to go.
Final thing before we kind of conscious of time here, folks, but the new people that we're bringing in, they probably need to be treated in a different way compared to people who we've got in-person experience with. You know, if we've worked together, there's a trust built. Yes, this person can now go remote, but a completely new person that you've hired from elsewhere, I'm not even sure it matters whether they're experienced or not. They're going to come into a scenario where they don't have a lot of network, they don't have a lot of social capital and so on. What like kind of additional things do you think that person needs in order to be, you know, more fully integrated into the company culture? Is there any kind of things you're applying right now that would be worth discussing? Go to you first with Mert, if you have any ideas.
I do. And I think what we should start doing is not only focusing on whether someone is new or you know, or has been in the company, but like, who is this new person joining? Is that person a parent? What are the characteristics that they have? What will they be needing it in that experience? Again, in my opinion, one fits for all new joiners won't work. You have to really identify, how should I make this onboarding experience as inclusive as possible, given the fact that these people all come from different backgrounds?
So on that, that's very interesting. So differentiate to the individual level, differentiate the onboarding, differentiate the candidate experience based on the individual kind of circumstances. And probably we need to start asking those questions, right? I mean, at one point it was very, you've got to kind of think about where the legality of it all is. So sometimes you not want to ask questions of this type. I think in certain jurisdictions, you're not able to ask questions like, do you have children, for instance, because that may be coming as prejudicial. But being aware of those kind of sort of issues, I think, you know, it makes sense to try and figure out what the life of this person is like. Because that's going to help you build, you know, the right kind of work design for this person. It is relevant whether you have like children, or whether you have something you care for, or whether there's another demand that's happening that's important for you. So, okay, we need to find a way to do that. Mel, you got a thought on this? Like, how do we differentiate? How do we kind of build the right experience for someone who's newly joined the company, never had previous history with anybody in the company?
Yeah, I think two things. I do think making sure that you are putting much more effort than you would normally do in the first kind of 2 weeks, at least 2 weeks, right? To make sure that they're connecting with all of the right people, that you are getting the team together. So this whole thing around a virtual team lunch, if it's a smaller team and you can't meet in the office. And it's interesting, because if I look at like our UK business, for example, they are now, when they have new starters, coming into the office in the first 2 weeks. So they're kind of in more regularly, just as part of that onboarding. But the other thing that I would definitely do, particularly when you have more people remote, is often, or at least in the organizations that I've been in the past, when people started, you know, you knew there was a new starter because they were walked around the office and introduced to people and you knew who that was, right? So getting them to do a bit of a bio, share a photo, have that kind of update on who this individual is, helps the rest of the business connect with that person. They start to understand a bit more. So they might do the thing that you're saying, oh, you and I have met, haven't you? And they won't have met necessarily, but they'll have seen something, or they'll at least be a bit closer to that person.
We do that introduction every Monday morning. We have the full meeting with all of Toca Boca, and it's like, these are the new joiners this week. And we introduce them and they get to say something, you know, in the big call. If they don't have to, again, you know, if they don't want to talk in front of the whole company, they don't have to. So they're being introduced and like questions asked beforehand that somebody else then talks about them. This is this person, they're doing this, and this is a bit about them. And then kind of, do you want to add something? And if they don't want to add something, they don't. And if they do, they do. So
you know what? Yeah, that's a really good practice in any case, wasn't it? I remember a friend of mine saying that a lesson that he learned from his first boss was that his boss actually took him to a 5-story office and actually met every single person in the office, spent the entire day doing that. And he was stunned because he was just joining as a junior person and he couldn't understand why this boss would just spend huge amounts of time doing it, until it clocked later on that what it meant was he was much more efficient in getting access to the network, and he became faster and better at his job that earlier because he had already met everybody, and not only already met everybody, but via the auspices of the big boss, right? So it wasn't that person, it wasn't on the individual employee's responsibility to meekly say, can I have a bit of time with you? The boss had said, listen, here's Hung. He's a new joiner, he's in that team. And then suddenly, you know, you're starting the relationship off in a different way. So yeah, lots of things I think we could do help build company culture in hybrid. So, okay, folks.
Some Monday morning introductions, even when we're at the office. So that was something that we just did virtually because we did it before as well.
Yeah, there's certain things I think do apply, right? They can just be virtualized and it might just work. Again, to Mert's point, it's a case of experimenting with it and seeing where that's true. Anyway, folks, I'm conscious of time. This is a topic, obviously, is much bigger than a 60-minute chat. So we can definitely try and continue this. Maybe a part 2 should be happening. I'm hoping that everyone's connected online, because sharing the LinkedIns, I'm hoping, means that, you know, if you want to continue the conversation, you can go ahead and do that. If you haven't shared your LinkedIn yet, go ahead and do so now. Otherwise, I'll be trying to write this up. I think the reason why I've been asking for points is because I'm trying to get better at documenting these notes. And once I've done that, I'll share that so that everyone can get access to it. But I think we've got some immediately practical tips that people can do to help improve people's experience of the company, which is great stuff. Okay, well, listen, let's let you go. Mert, thank you so much for your time. Great to have you on your debut. Love to get you back if you're up for it. You have a good weekend, sir. And Mel, great to see you. And by the way, your team was awesome on was it Wednesday or Tuesday?
Wednesday.
They did a marvelous job. Thanks for supporting True, is awesome. And I'll see you soon, hopefully. Okay.
Yeah. See you soon. Bye.
Great. Wasn't that interesting? It's always good chat. My time management needs to get better, because I always feel there's more left on the table. That we could potentially explore, but I think we've got a lot of things exchanged that we could potentially just remind ourselves a little bit of if we're struggling about the culture build. Sophia, what do you got planned rest of the day? Anything interesting?
Well, you know, it's Friday, so my kids are cooking dinner today, so they're gonna make burgers and mini pizzas, and they're cooking, so I'm looking forward to that.
Right, that's exciting. Have you got a spare like ramen noodles like hanging around? Alternative.
They
know how to do it. Okay, I don't want to denigrate the children's ability to cook. I'm sure they can do it. Okay, well, enjoy your meal, enjoy your family, Sophia. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll catch up soon. There's other things we need to talk about. Great.
Bye.
Cool. That's it, everybody. We're back next week. Follow the channel if you want to have more. We're talking about how to have better intake meetings with your manager. So if you've got a problem with your hiring manager, you want to capture the information in a more efficient way, and make sure you join that show. It's inspired, actually, by the chat we had with John Blastelica. Okay, that's it, everybody. Thanks for watching.